Yes, well, a big thank you to JJ Hartigan for keeping us entertained throughout this bank holiday afternoon. It is Monday, June 5th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Alan Cawley will be dialing in live from the showgrounds in Sligo to chat soccer alongside Stephen Kelly. We'll reflect on the FA Cup final and keep you up to date with this evening's League of Ireland matches. Adam McKendry of the Belfast Telegraph will be reviewing a momentous weekend for Irish golfer Tom McKibben. And in Gaelic Games, Peter Canavan and Austin O'Malley will have their say on a busy couple of days of Gaelic football. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there, good evening. I hope you're enjoying the last of the bank holiday sunshine. Austin O'Malley, you're dedicated to the cause because you said, saw the sunshine, I'm going to come in and chat a bit of sport with me for the evening. So I appreciate that.
I know, yeah, always good to come in. And, you know, I got a good hit today, so I was okay.
That's okay.
I know you've been here all weekend.
Unfortunately.
So I won't rub it in.
Unfortunately. I'm here tomorrow. Marie's on for the rest of the week, so hopefully the weather stays up for the rest of the week.
Please God, yeah.
Okay, we will be chatting Gaelic football in a few moments' time. We're going to get to golf, but before we do, just give you an update on the League of Ireland that's ongoing at the moment. It is half-time in Turner's Cross between Cork City and Bohemians, and there are no goals to report. There are three goals in Oriel Park, though. Dundalk are leading UCD 2-1. UCD took the lead, but Dundalk have come back at half-time. They lead 2-1. Pat Hooven getting a penalty for Dundalk. Now, he's just two goals away from Joey Donnelly's all-time scoring record with Dundalk. So keep an eye on that one. In the first division, the men's first division, Waterford had a big 7-0 win over Treaty United on Friday, and they followed that up with a 6-0 win against Kerry today in Tralee. So Waterford going well, second in the league at the moment. Cove and Longford is currently nil all, and Galway are 4-0 up on Finn Harps. So Shinné for now. As I mentioned, it was a momentous weekend for Tom McKibben from the same golf club as Rory McIlroy. Now we'll speak to Adam McKendry of the Belfast Telegraph very shortly, but first, after Tom's big win yesterday, he spoke to RTÉ's Greg Allen, and we can hear that interview now.
Game on.
Golf.
Yeah, feeling pretty amazing. That shot in the pin was probably one of the best shots I ever hit. So, yeah, feeling pretty good. I mean, it hasn't really sunk in yet. I'm sure tomorrow will be a bit different, but feeling pretty good right now.
The way that the day went, the final day went, like you had a chance of winning, tied for the lead going into the final round. How did you sleep last night for a start?
Slept pretty good. I mean, I've been pretty sick all week with like the cold and my throat, and I'm sure you can hear my voice. So I've been sort of more worrying about trying to get that fixed than the golf. So I think that probably helped a wee bit. But yeah, slept pretty good.
Tell me, do you feel that this was coming? You got off to a great start to the season and then you had a bit of a lull, but you found a bit of form in the last couple of weeks. Did you feel something was coming that you were going to get into a position to challenge and that when you got the chance, you were going to take it?
I guess so. I mean, my game was sort of, I've been playing well sort of all year until the last couple of months and sort of slipped up a few things and had a few unlucky breaks and stuff, but I've been working hard, and I mean, I sort of knew once I got a golf course that really suited me and was pretty tough, it would sort of help me a lot, and I think this week sort of proved that.
Yeah, it was a tough golf course, single figure under par wins, but you won with style. Like, you birdied three holes in the front nine, you had a couple of bogeys in the back nine, and then you were back in a share of the lead. How did you cope with those feelings?
I actually felt pretty good all day. I mean, I felt pretty calm and everything. I sort of just went out and I knew it was a hard course, so I knew I didn't really have to force anything, and I think that sort of helped as well. But I felt good out there all day.
You have been a professional. Last year, you qualified in the top 10 of the Challenge Tour, which in itself was a huge achievement. But you left the amateur ranks at 18. That was a brave decision. You qualify from the Challenge Tour, first season in the Challenge Tour, and then you win in your debut season on the DP World Tour. How are you processing this? Or is this what you planned?
I guess it's sort of what I planned, but for all that happened so quickly and to win out here already in my rookie season, it's pretty special. I mean, I was just sort of going week by week and seeing what happened, but this week has sort of definitely turned that around.
Are you still kind of getting to grips with what you've just achieved? You've just not won any tournament on the DP World Tour. You've won the European Open.
Yeah, I guess. I guess it'll hit me tomorrow more when I'm just sitting there chilling out. But yeah, it's pretty special and a huge honour.
This obviously opens doors for you. What are your plans?
I'm not too sure yet. I'll probably sit down and think about that over the next couple of days and sort of look at things. Probably means I can sort of play in all the big events now and maybe take a few sort of weeks off when I would have had to have played before, so I can sort of really, really nitpick the schedule.
Tom, congratulations at 20 years of age, a winner on the DP World Tour. Congratulations, and the way you did it today, spectacular. Well done.
Cheers. Thanks, Greg.
That was a very humble and happy Tom McKibben speaking to RT's Greg Allen. Adam McKendry now joins me, sports journalist with the Belfast Telegraph. And Adam, before I come to you, just to kind of give to elaborate a bit more on the win for those who mightn't have been across it at the weekend. Tom went into the final round of the Porsche European Open in Hamburg in his share of the lead, and he proceeded to shoot a steady 3-under-70 to win the event by two shots. McKibben moved into the overall lead thanks to three birdies on the front nine. However, he opened the door for the chasing pack on the back nine as he dropped two shots. The Belfast man birdied 15 to ensure that he went down 18 on 8-under par. However, he maintained his aggressive approach and reaped the rewards for an incredible approach to the final pin. And Adam, I suppose what struck me there from that interview is that is a man that is not media trained in the best possible way. Just so laid back, so casual. And you know what? It's a win. It's not like it's your maiden European Tour win or DP World Tour win.
I mean, I think if you describe him any other way, it would be, if he was any more calm, he'd be horizontal. You know, he's such a relaxed guy at the age of 20. And I mean, whenever you're good friends with Rory McIlroy, who's probably the most media trained guy out there, you sort of learn a few things. But like, for someone so young to be, you know, becoming a professional at 18 and foregoing the college route and sort of going out onto the professional circuit so early, to be doing what he's doing is incredible, and to see his rise so quickly has been not so much of a shock for those of us who have watched him from his amateur days, knowing what he's capable of. But to see him pick up a win in the way that he did, to hold off the chasing pack that were coming after him, I think that speaks volumes of the poise and control that he has in his game. And certainly it maybe wasn't, you know, we didn't really see it coming per se, but I think we all knew that he was going to be a potential star in this game, and it's no shock to see him getting a win. It's just, it's come maybe a little bit sooner than some people would have thought, but he fully deserved it for that final round, especially on that back nine there.
Talk to me about his journey then, for those that mightn't be aware. Like, I mean, you mentioned that for people that around him and people that would have seen him golf throughout his teenage years, even, that this was a man or a boy destined for stardom.
Yeah, and coming from a town like Hollywood with 11,000 people, there must be something in the water for there to be two golfers of such caliber coming from there. But yeah, McKibben sort of burst onto the scene whenever he was only 12 years old. He won an event on the Irish Junior Open, and he's kind of just gone from there, where he's, you know, come up through the amateur ranks and picked up a few big wins. You know, he won over in the Sage Valley in America, which is a big amateur tournament. He won the Peter McAvoy Trophy in England. He's played for GB in Ireland at the Jacques Leglise Trophy. And he represented Ireland whenever he was just 16 at the Home Internationals in Lahinch. So the signs have been there that this is a guy who has something about him. But I think it was really the fact that he missed out on the Walker Cup in 2021. Everyone thought that he was going to be in the squad that was going out to play at Seminole, and he got the call to say that he wasn't going to be involved. So that was sort of the spark that led to him becoming a professional, maybe slightly earlier than everyone expected, and deciding to go it so early. But I think, you know, he's been someone who, very similar to McIlroy, and I don't want to make too many comparisons to McIlroy because that's unfair on McKibben, who's very much his own player, but he's somebody who has had a very similar trajectory in terms of the profile that he's had, and that people have known about him for a long time, and they've known the credentials that he has. They know the wins that he's had, and whenever he turned professional, I think there was a lot of expectation on his shoulders that he was going to be able to do something, especially with all those links to McIlroy. But he's whenever he turned pro, there was that sort of belief this was going to be the start of something special. And it's just, it's great to see him having done that, and sort of not only just to get this win, but the way he's done it, where he hasn't had to rely on, you know, call-ups to European Tour events or DP World Tour events or anything like that. He's done the hard graft. He's worked his way up through the Challenge Tour last year with some great finishes, finished second at the K Club at the Irish Challenge last year and put in a great performance there, finishing the top 20 in the Road to Mallorca standings and got his place in the DP World Tour this year. And now he's put himself in there, as you heard in that interview that he did with Greg there, where, you know, he can now sit down and look at a schedule. And I think that's the most important thing. A lot of players can really suffer from the grind of week in, week out, where they're going to events and they may be coming close to winning, but they're not winning, and you just have to keep going. Whenever you get that win, it allows you to play in the Rolex Series events. It allows you to know that no matter how you play for the rest of the year, you've got your tour card for next season. So there's that pressure off his shoulders now. He can look ahead in the schedule and think, well, I don't have to play this week. I can now take a week off and rest up and go and play in the big events. And that should lead to more money, more ranking points, more Race to Dubai points. And hopefully that will help him really look ahead and sort of find a way to maximize his schedule and maximize his performances.
From not knowing him personally, but from even listening to yourself, Adam, and from reading up on Tom and listening to other experts in the field, he seems like a man that no matter where the next step is, that even for such a young man, he'll be able to handle the pressure, and he has the mental resilience as well to perform as a professional athlete.
Absolutely, and I think that's something that is just a part of his personality, to be honest. There is a real sense of calm and composure about him, especially whenever you talk to him. He's very much a mentally sound player, and that helps that he has surrounded himself with some great people. He's just brought veteran caddy Dave McNeely onto the bag, who would have really helped him over the weekend. I mean, I said earlier about some of the guys he was facing up against on that leaderboard. If you look at some of those guys, you know, like Marcel Seam is a multiple tour winner. You've got Max Kiefer playing in front of his home crowd, trying to get the win. Even the guys he was playing against, Jordan Smith and David Law, both previous winners on tour, and he's out there as a 20-year-old trying to get his first win on tour. He was probably the underdog out of all of them in that six-way tie to start the day, and even a few guys further down the leaderboard probably would have had better odds than him even going into that final round. But just to be able to take that pressure and absorb it and actually use it to play the way he did so solidly, you know, he didn't have a bogey until the back nine, and then pull off the finish that he did, you know, to play that shot into 15 and just clear the water, managed to calm his nerves, wait for Jordan Smith to go through all that stuff over the back of the green where he was dropping his ball, and still play a beautiful chip shot and get the birdie. And then that shot into 18 will probably get nominated for a DP World Tour Shot of the Year. I can't imagine there'll be many that will be better than it. So I think, you know, having McNeely on the bag will have helped. Having his dad, Robin, there, who travels with him all the time, just knowing that there's that security there of having a familiar face after every round to go to, and, you know, knowing just the kind of person that he is and the calmness and composure that he has. He's somebody who can really put himself in a good place to flourish, because as they always say, golf is 90% mental and 10% physical, and if that is true, then McKibben's certainly given himself a massive leg up on the rest of the field, because he's got the mental side of the game pretty well down.
I always take issue with people who say golf isn't a team sport. You mightn't have teammates out on the course, but there are so many people around you that you need the right people around you to be advising you, to be in your ear, and to be practicing and to be training and to be improving your performances. On the, I suppose, the link with Roy McIlroy, it's amazing that, as you mentioned, they're both from the same golf club. I suppose there's pros and cons to that in terms of he's not the worst fella to be able to drop a text to when you need a bit of advice, perhaps. But also, like, dealing with that extra pressure, how much extra pressure does that add, that when you see Rory and everything that he's achieved, and then you see the articles of, like, listen, McIlroy was 19 when he won his first European Tour title and then was a major winner 2 years later as well. So you're trying to kind of block out that somewhat, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you can't avoid it. I think that's the thing you have to start with. Is as much as you don't want to make all those comparisons, whenever you have two guys coming from the same place in such a small town just outside Belfast, you kind of can't overlook the fact that there is that link between the two of them. So on one hand, it is good because he does have McIlroy to go to, and we heard McIlroy talking after the memorial last night about how proud he was of Tom and what he did over in Germany, and that's amazing to see. You know, Rory, who is playing and at the very top level of the sport, still keeping track of Tom and how he's getting on, and I know he keeps track of the other Northern Irish players out there as well. So just to see that was fantastic. But equally, as I said, and I wrote a piece today just trying to emphasize this, you really can't use the comparisons too much because that's unfair on McKibben. You can't say, oh, Rory did this and Rory did that, because they're two completely different players. And if you start to compare them, then it puts unnecessary pressure on McKibben, who could go on to have a world-class career that just happens at a slightly different time to McIlroy. So I think one of the things that people have to try and do is not make that obvious comparison. By all means, say that they're from the same town and came up through the same club, but I think you've got to look at McKibben on his own merits, and for somebody who has just got his first win, let him enjoy it, let him look ahead and start to work out what this means for him moving forward, and then see where he goes from there. He's got one win, and as much as we know he's got the potential to add many more to that, it's just one win at the moment. So let him get to that point, let him work it out with his own team, and don't put that pressure on him to say, now you've got to go on and win 30 more times in order to match McIlroy. Two different players. Let him have his own time in the stardom, and we'll see where he goes.
I'm always hesitant, like, even when I'm chatting to soccer with a couple of the guests, when we mention Evan Ferguson for Ireland, it's like, actually, he's going to be the next Pele. Never mind that and else. So you're trying to put a bit of perspective on it. But for Tom McKibben, for himself, for the individual, like, you've followed the sport for a number of years, and you're working in it, and you know it inside out. How good do you feel, objectively, he can be throughout the course of his career now?
He's got all the tools. He really does. And I think the fact that he's come up through the ranks so quickly shows that. There are very few players who, within 2 years of turning professional, have got a win on the DP World Tour. And there are a lot of players who will go through their careers without wins on the DP World Tour. So he's already put himself above a lot of great players in the game by finishing atop of a leaderboard. So certainly there's no doubting that on his day he can compete. It is just learning how to play with greater expectations. You know, one of the things that he hasn't had to do yet is start a tournament as one of the featured players. You know, he started this week as just a member of the field, and by Sunday he became a featured player because he was tied for the lead. There's every chance that the next time he plays, he might get put in one of the featured groups because he's a recent winner on tour, and he'll have to deal with that. You know, having every shot from his first couple of rounds shown on TV, he'll have the added pressure of being expected to back it up. You know, now you're a one-time winner, when are you going to get a second? So there are a lot of things that he is going to now have to deal with that he hasn't had to. But the biggest thing that I think you can take from what he has done so far is the fact is every time he's been asked to step up a level from that first year where he went onto the Challenge Tour and just sort of learned what it was about, he then made the step up the following year, last year, and got his DP World Tour card by finishing the top 20 of the rankings. And now in his first full season on the DP World Tour, he is a winner. So at every level, he is passing those tests, and he is taking the pressure on his shoulders, and he is passing every test that is being asked of him so far. So there is every chance that just with the more pressure that is put on his shoulders, the more he will actually thrive under it. So there is every chance that this could be the first win of many for Tom McKibben. And I don't want to put too much pressure on his shoulders, but, you know, I think we've seen him coming through, and from his amateur days to now, he is a proven winner. So there's something to be said for that, for sure.
Absolutely. And here's hoping we will be chatting about Tom McKibben for many years to come. Adam, if we just finish up our conversation and pivot to Rory McIlroy, who believes he made progress at the Memorial Tournament despite fading from the joint lead on a final day when his putter and wedges went cold. What did you make of Rory's tournament overall, and indeed his final round?
Yeah, I get where he's coming from whenever he says there was progress made overall. I mean, if you look at McIlroy's season as a whole so far, it has been one where it started well out in the desert, and it's kind of fizzled out a little bit since he's come to America. But we saw signs over the weekend, and especially sort of Friday and Saturday, where he came back into contention. Who knows what he would have done if he hadn't had that triple bogey in his on the final hole of his first round, what he potentially could have gone on to do if he had held the lead on his own going into Sunday, as opposed to being in a tie for the lead. But I think, yeah, just whenever you look at Sunday's final round, it's the bogeys that are killing him. We all know that McIlroy is a very good birdie player. He racks up more birdies than the rest of the field usually, but it's that risk reward play style that he has, that he's constantly trying to push the matter and trying to go for every pin and trying to pick up those birdies that lead to the mistakes. And I think sometimes maybe he just has to rein it in a little bit and just sort of work out when par is a good score, because we know he's going to make birdies, and we saw that on Sunday where the birdies came, but whenever he found a couple of bogeys, they would start to spiral. He had three and four holes on the front nine and three in a row on the back nine. So I think for him it's a case of, I do agree, I think it was progress this week, but I do think he has still a way to go, especially as we come towards the US Open. I think, especially whenever you consider how tough a test the US Open usually is and how tough they usually set up the course, where par tends to be a good score, I think one of the things he has to learn is that you've got to grind out your pars, because he's far too good not to make birdies. So, but I do think there were signs there that he is in the right direction. It's maybe going to be a little bit of a slow grind, but we saw this last year where he came good at the right end of last season to win the Tour Championship, and he won the CJ Cup again. So there's every chance he's sort of timing a good run for the end of the season. But of course, we would like to see him timing it a little bit better for Augusta and the USPGA and the US Open. But hopefully he's seen enough in his game that he can get it right for LA Country Club in a short while.
Okay, well, interesting times ahead for Irish golf. Adam McKendry of the Belfast Telegraph, thank you very much for taking the call. We are going to be chatting soccer in 60 seconds time with Alan Colley and Stephen Kelly. Stick with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to a bank holiday Game On with me, Shane Dawson, Austin O'Malley and Peter Canavan. We'll be chatting Gaelic football very, very shortly. Stephen Kelly is standing by to chat football. But first, we're going to go live to the showgrounds and to what I'm told is a very sunburnt Alan Colley. Alan, are you there, sir? Alan is not there, unfortunately. Is he back? Alan Colley, are you there now?
I'm here, Shane. I can hear you, and I don't. You won't recognise me when I come back. I'll be absolutely toasted. It'll be the Spaniard Alan Colley that'll be in the studio with it.
Diego Colley. And Austin O'Malley here in studio was only slagging me because I haven't got out to enjoy any sun, and now you're rubbing it in as well. Listen, chat to me then about the football. So Sligo Rovers, just to give a brief update on the scores at the moment. Dundalk were leading UCD by 2-1. They are now leading by 3-1. It is still nil all between Cork City and Bohemians. Cove have taken the lead against Longford in the first division. They're leading 1-0. Galway have added another. It's 5-0 against Finn Harps, and Waterford had that earlier 6-0 win over Kerry. How have the first 25 minutes gone between Sligo Rovers and Shamrock Rovers, Alan?
Yeah, the reason it's probably so quiet around me, Shane, is because I'm sitting down the railway end, the end that Sligo Rovers are playing into, and the goalkeeper of Shamrock Rovers, who is obviously the closest to me on the pitch, has very little to do. In fact, he's had nothing to do. I probably had more to do up at the stand than he's had. It's been all Shamrock Rovers, Shane, the first 25 minutes. They're the ones in total control of the game, dominating possession, creating probably only one clear-cut chance. There was one through. He went on a brilliant run, came inside. He He's given the fullback a lot of trouble, to be fair. And just on cue, I think there's another one cleared off. Oh, just another one cleared off the line. They're hanging on here, Sligo Rovers. At best, Shane, it's total dominance from Shamrock Rovers, but yet to find the net.
No player sent off as well. It's a success for
no. Sure. Yeah, I actually don't recognise this Shamrock Rovers with 11 players on the pitch. used to seeing them with 8 and 9.
Listen, it's going to be a big evening in the League of Ireland, as Dundalk have just scored their fourth goal against UCD Cork, and Bowes is still nil all. Pats and Derry's at 6:45. Shells Drogheda at 7:45. So Rovers will want to get a victory here to put the pressure on Derry. They have a 1-point lead at the top of the table at the moment, because Derry going to Pats won't be easy. They were held to nil all draw at home on Friday to Shells.
Yeah, absolutely, Shane. Of course they'll want to hammer home the advantage, and as they're coming off the back of a good win Friday night in Tala, 2-0, totally dominant in that as well. They'll want to, as I say, capitalise on I suppose Derry slipping up, so, and those games to follow this evening. But they are in total control here, Shamrock Rovers. He's actually made a couple of changes to the game. Aaron Green, who we know scored 2 against Dundalk on Friday night, funnily enough, he's been left on the bench, and they're freshening it up with Gaffney and Kenny up front. It was Johnny Kenny actually that had that brilliant chance, just swivelled on the left foot, but it was a really good save from McNicholas. But as I say, Shamrock Rovers are in total control here. Sligo Rovers have offered nothing really. As I said, the goalkeepers had nothing to do here in front of me. And you would think, looking at the, I suppose, the pattern of play so far in the opening half an hour, it's only a matter of time. But you'd be hoping Sligo Rovers, if they were to hang on to half time, that can offer a little bit more in the second half. But as we know, their form has been so poor as well. They've lost 4 of their last 5, so they've come into this game obviously low in confidence, and it shows in this opening half an hour. It's been total dominance from Shamrock Rovers.
Alan, before I let you go and enjoy the rest of the match in the showgrounds, just a word then on Pat's Derry and Shells Drogheda. Can Derry turn around? So the draw against Shells on Friday, and then they lost to Sligo the week before after 4 consecutive victories. So will they be bouncing back to their good run of form in Inchicore this evening?
Yeah, they'll be hoping for that. But to be fair, St. Pat's are on a brilliant run themselves. It's 4 wins and 5 also since John Daly has come in. So they've put themselves in the picture also, Shane, as we discussed on Friday about potentially been in the hunt and in the chase, if they can hang on the coattails of the top 2 or 3 for as long as possible. So they'll want to continue that good form. So it's a tough game for Derry City. I wouldn't fancy them overly, to be honest with you. I think that could be a draw tonight in Inchicore.
Okay, now I hope you're sitting down, because I'm actually positive for a Shelburne result this evening. For once, Alan, for once, I think we might actually get a result at home to draw it. Do you agree?
Shane Dawson that's talking to me. It's definitely Shane Dawson.
I must have got too much sun on the drive in.
Yeah, no, I would fancy them. Drogheda obviously suffered a defeat to Cork as well the other night. Shelburne getting a good point up in the Brandywell, probably a back-to-the-wall performance, but we all know how good they are defensively, so they're quite comfortable with that type of performance. But the onus is on them tonight and come out and play a little bit. And they do have the players to play, as we know, Shane, and I'd expect them to get the victory tonight against Drogheda.
Okay, Alan Colley, stay out of the sun, mind yourself, and we'll chat to you again very soon. Just to update you, Dundalk 4, UCD 1, and it's a hat-trick for Pat Hooban, so he has now equaled Joey Donnelly's record as all-time goal scorer for Dundalk. So we will keep you up to date with all of the League of Ireland scores this evening. Sligo, Shamrock Rovers, and indeed Pats and Derry will catch the first 15 minutes of that one. But Stephen Kelly is standing by to chat football in England. Stephen, how are you, sir? Stephen, do you know what? It would help. I must have got too much sun. It would help if I put up your fader. So that's completely on me. So Stephen Kelly, I'll ask you again. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. How are you, sir?
I'm all good now. I'm all good. I had a very perplexed Austin O'Malley looking at me there. I'd be like, why can't I hear Stephen talk? And that's completely on me. Listen, let's start with the FA Cup final then. Manchester City on their way towards a potential treble. What did you make of the cup final itself as a spectacle?
Kind of what I expected. I expected City to win. I think everybody did. I don't think they were going to blow them out of the water. I think there's going to be too much at stake. United were going to put up a decent fight, but I think City's quality was going to come to the forefront like it did. And yeah, it was a decent enough game, actually. Two teams, history against each other, derby in the final, which is always nice. And it just came to the end that we all would have expected and predicted, which was a City win. But it's just the way they go about their business, the energy levels, their pressing, their passing, their adaptability to situations when they go from being pressed themselves to be able to play the ball long. Like the goal initially is like straight from Trapattoni's route one book down to Doyle or onto Keenan, a shot goal. It was like ridiculous. You know what I mean? That's what it came from. And it just shows the many facets that they have. They're a team that are almost unplayable because they can play any style, but then they can also just play off the park as well. So it's very hard to play against them. And, you know, Gundogan coming up with that strike, he's been banging goals that are of high importance over the last few seasons, and two more in the FA Cup final, which is just, you know, pretty amazing.
It's funny you mention a Route 1 Irish goal because it is the 21st anniversary of Robbie Keane.
I know.
Scoring that crucial goal. I only saw that on Twitter.
I was picturing it. I was thinking Robbie's was a bit closer to the goal and yeah, was clearly knocking it down, but it was straight out of that playbook. But that's the difference, isn't it? That's the thing. City now, they don't have to just be camped in your half for 90 minutes of the game and just finally wear you down and score a goal. They can think, right, you know what, come at us. We'll defensively be solid because they have Diaz and Kanji and Ake, and they look like a team that the back four look like they love defending. They look like they want to tackle, they want to kick, they want to hurt you. You know what I mean? All those things you want from mean defenders, that's what they do. But then they can go, right, let's pass it because you have Rodriguez. Or we can just go long to Haaland if you want, or else we can just keep the ball in your half of the pitch. So it's almost an impossible situation you could find yourself in playing against a side because they just have too many strengths to their bow.
How important is the goal scorer Ilkay Gundogan to how Manchester City, like, he makes them tick, and he's kind of that unsung hero, and he's so humble as well.
It is, and it's the level of importance he's had for the last few seasons has been enormous. And you know, Pep, you see how important he is. Pep has him as captain. You know, that's the level of players he has in around that squad, and that's the one he has chosen to wear the armband because he feels like he's Mr. Reliant. And a lot of it goes unnoticed. It's a lot of the interlinking play. He's the one between Rodri and De Bruyne, which is a weird position to think you've got three midfielders in there, but that's kind of what he is. But because he's been popping up with really important goals, but you can't forget, it was a couple of seasons ago, not last season, I think the season before, where I think he was top goal scorer. Maybe last season. I think he had almost 20 goals. So he's a player, he's a midfielder that can actually do everything. He can pass, he can tackle, he can score goals. His energy levels to boot as well, considering he's not you know, a young pup anymore. So it's just one of those players you watch and you look at and you think there's nothing that this guy cannot do. And the level of, again, humility he shows on the pitch and as a player and off the field and stuff, you just think, wow. You know, what if you can look up to someone and someone like, and to have young players in around him, it's a great person to have in your team.
I want to continue the conversation on the Manchester teams, but just an update in the League of Ireland. Bad news for Bohemian Football Club. Cork City have taken the lead in Turner's Cross. Healy with the goal there. So there are about 15 minutes left to play in Cork, and it is 1-0 to the home side. Just on Manchester City, because I do want to chat about Manchester United, how much confidence and belief within that group will they have now that they can go on and get that treble?
I think confidence and belief is always there with them. You watch it, they firmly believe everything they do is going to result in wins. And that's from the manager. They know, you know, you just look at the level the players are playing. Like John Stones the weekend, like, I know people were talking about him on TV and stuff and all, but I was watching him going, this guy is just, he was immense, absolutely immense. His position, in a sense, his passing, the way he was tracking back, you know, he was like Rodri, and then Rodri tired and Stones was doing his job for him. Going from midfield to defence, I would say they're going to be so confident. It's the overconfidence that you don't want, and I don't think Pep will allow that to seep in, not on the verge of something that they should be able to do. They should be able to beat Inter. Listen, it's not going to be easy. I don't think Inter should have enough for them, but they're no mugs. They're no team that can be pushed over. They've got, you know, decent players in the forward areas. Dzeko up top as well, and in the middle of the park that you feel it could cause problems, but you just think that City will have too much for them.
You would. It's that interchangeable kind of aspect of the Manchester City players. Like I remember years ago at a Gaelic Football Manager who said, you take the lines off the pitch, you'd play anywhere, and we all kind of scoffed and laughed at him. But it's like, when you have the quality of the Manchester City players that are able to just slot in anywhere, it's scary to watch almost.
Honestly, it is. I keep talking about this. People were talking about, you know, player manager of the year and all, like Eddie Howe and all these people. I'm saying, honestly, Pep has changed football. For me, in my time watching Premier League football and playing in it, the only manager I can think of, like Ferguson is the top of the tree when it comes to dominance and as he was, but when it comes to actually changing the style of football, Arsene Wenger changed it. I remember he came in and there was a difference in how football was played and how it was thought about and how players were dynamic and the pace that he used, and it was just different to what had been there before. So he changed it, and Pep has changed it. So they're the two managers that I think that have fundamentally changed football in the UK. And it's the interchange of positions, Shane, that you're talking about. Like, I don't know a team that every player in the team could actually play every position and not have a problem playing in that position. Like, you were so set in my way, as I was, like, I was a centre back, I was a full back, or sometimes I was a wing back, and I knew they were my positions, these were my angles, this is what I play to. You would never dream about playing centre midfield or being put centre forward if you had to, but these players, you feel absolutely could do any one of those positions and not struggle at all. And it's what the coach breeds in them, and, you know, it is. It's a phenomenal to watch. Absolutely phenomenal to watch.
Yeah, jack of all trades, master of all of them as well.
Of all, yeah.
For Manchester United then, League Cup, FA Cup final, Champions League finish, overall a successful season for Erik ten Hag?
Hugely successful season. You've been on with us, you've listened to us, we yourself, Ruby and Alan Cawley, talk about the shambles at United being and the players not being accountable and how bad they were, and they need to get people out of the change room, and, you know, they were awful at times, players hiding behind the jersey, no one actually willing to do it, to go from what they were to Champions League football, an extra trophy in the cabinet, and then a final as well. Like, that's more than what anybody in Manchester United would have wanted. The problem is now is, as soon as you get to that level, the expectations are going to be right back up with the fact that people are going to want them to win the league again. They're still far off that. They're nowhere near that. But they're getting there, and it's a progress. And if they get the players they're talking about getting, then that puts them back in the forefront and keeps them pushing towards closing that gap between themselves and City. But City still have a big gap.
Yeah, for strengthening then for Erik ten Hag, obviously a lot rides on the takeover deal and what resources will be available to him in terms of what he has to work with. Like, where are the positions that are an absolute we need change, and then there's a few others that we might like change, we might like cover there? I mean, David De Gea has gone from unorthodox to unreliable. Like, can a summer change that, or is his race ran at United?
I'm not too sure. It's hard to know, get a read on what they're thinking of, because there's talks of him being in conversation with a new contract. Then there's rumours coming out that he's going to be on the move. It's just, who do they have lined up? Who are they going to get? And, you know, the player that jumps out to mind, the goalkeeper, I think that's who sometimes is, honestly, can be painful to watch, and is Jordan Pickford. And I know, but I just think ready-made goalkeeper, plays in the UK, very good with the ball on his feet, very good shot stopper, is very reliable, even though, like I said, at times you're watching him and you're pulling your hair. As a defender, I think I'd want to kill him. He just screams at you the whole time. I think you're listening and going, oh my God, how does Seamus listen to him at times? But he is what he is, and he's actually a very good goalkeeper. So you don't think, if they, you know, everything are on the slump, I know he's just signed the new deal, but maybe that's someone they go out and get that would be an improvement on De Gea.
I think at the moment it's Diogo Costa has been linked with them, and a couple of other Premier League clubs as well. Could be a swap deal. Weghorst has been linked with Everton, so it could be.
Well, yeah, mate, that's what's made it think. I know Weghorst is not their player.
But yeah,
I was kind of like, you know, him going there and something possible. But I think Pickford would be a decent fit for them. And then you go centre forward and maybe a centre back. Centre forward, you know, if they get Harry Kane, then that changes things. You know, you're guaranteed 20 plus goals a season for your centre forward, and you've got the creativity from Fernandes and Eriksen in there. You know, you've got the makings of what could be an extremely potent attack if Rashford still comes to the forefront next season, and he links well with him at England. When you've seen them play together, they actually play quite well together. And then Anthony, if he can up his game and up his numbers next season, then you kind of think, you know what, that midfield and attacking lineup could be extremely difficult for any team to stay with.
Mason Mount has been strongly linked with them, and to the untrained eye, I was a bit surprised by that. Does he fit into the Erik ten Hag game plan?
Yeah, Mason Mount he get a lot of critics this season, and you know, his performance has been off. Chelsea have been awful as a team, as a whole, as a group. They've been brutal and nowhere near good enough. Two seasons previous to that, he was their player of the year, and Chelsea won the Champions League in one of those seasons. You know, so he's not turned into a bad player overnight. I don't know what the situation is with attitude and why, if that's your boyhood club, why you'd want to leave. Question marks around me for that. And you know, if he's not feel like he's loved enough almost from the club and the board when it comes to finances, when he's seen what's been brought in and what the money's been thrown about. But when it comes to actual players, like, I think when you a good kind of margin for if a player's suitable, there's really strong rumblings that Liverpool are interested in him, and that's because he's got quality in the ball and his energy levels are through the roof. You know, that's what you want. You want a player that's tenacious, runs around, makes an impact in the game. If they can't make an impact through their quality on the ball, which he will do, and his passing and his movement, can he make an impact with his pressing and his energy and his you know, ability to adapt to a shape and a side that will suit you? And I think he would be perfect for Liverpool, because if they get McAllister, where it looks like it's done, it makes a mount on the other side, would be a great one for them as well, for energy wise. And then I think he would fit into Manchester United because he just gives that little bit of youth and energy into that side as well. You know, he's still very young, and I'm trying to think, crazy Chelsea, if they're going to sell him to two of their main competitors, it seems like a crazy deal, but sure. Stranger things have happened.
Very much so. Penny for Potch's thoughts. Listen, they're the players that could be on the move, but the big news today that I have to pick your brain on, Stephen Kelly, is that Tottenham Hotspur are expected to open talks with Celtic manager Ange Postecoglou about becoming their new boss in the next few days, or even the talks could be happening this evening. Who knows? Well, you might have an inside line for us, Stephen, do you?
Well, by all accounts, an agreement has been reached with Celtic.
Okay.
Yes, this is what I've heard. So Tottenham have supposedly reached an agreement with Celtic for him to become the new manager. I don't know whether it's personal thing stuff has been done, but there could be an announcement pretty soon.
Okay. Would you welcome that announcement?
Yeah, you know what? A lot of people are up in arms about it, talking about, you know, but I think Tottenham fans honestly don't know what they want anymore. They wanted Mourinho, they wanted Conte, and I wanted those managers. I wanted winners, born winners, come in, you know, mess the place up a little bit, aggression, and get players just performing and set up that they can win games even if it's ugly. And you know, you take that now, Tottenham fans now want, like, no, we get back to the old Tottenham, get back to playing nice football, get back to, you know, but will that win us stuff? You know, who knows what's going to be happening. And then with Poch going to Chelsea, that's been like a dagger in the heart for half the fan base. So I think, where do you go? The problem with Postecoglou is, and it's not the problem with him as a manager per se, it's the problem with the fact that Tottenham seem to have gone to five different managers previous to him. So he looks like the first one that's actually said yes out of all the different candidates that they've gone to. And that's where people are like, well, we're going to get him because, you know, he's fifth on the list and he's not what we actually wanted. But you know what? From what fans want in a style of football playing wise, he's kind of very similar to Poch. It's high energy, it's high pressing. It's a manager that he's aggressive in the way he wants to do things. He's coming in different to what Poch did when he first came in. He's actually won trophies. This guy knows how to win. He's gone on the back of, and listen, it's Celtic. And we know when it comes to Premier League, it's not as held in as high esteem because it's going to be Celtic, it's going to be Rangers. If you manage one of those clubs, there's every chance you're going to win a trophy if you're up there, just based on you know, over the years. But he's still done the treble, which is not only what five managers have ever done in Celtic history. And one of those is Jock Stein, one of the greatest managers ever. So I think
he's in good company. Would he be able to handle the step up as well? And as a character as well. Like, I loved hearing from him of, like, when after winning the treble, he's like, ah, everyone wrote me off. Everyone thought it was a joke when I came here, and look what I've achieved. Like, he seems to have that backbone.
He seems made of stern stuff, and you read into his history and his past, and which I have been doing lately, of, you know, travel from Greece on a ship to get to Australia, you know, during tough times. And you know, he's not come up the easy way. He's managed through all different levels, had to prove himself at every one, and I'm sure he's gone into Tottenham knowing what's at stake, because he's gone from leaving a legacy at Celtic where he's adored by the fans, like absolutely adored, to coming into what could be a bit of a cesspit with the Tottenham fans, who aren't sure whether they want him and aren't sure whether he's good enough. And he's going to want to prove them wrong. And I like that. I like that he wants to take the job on with an attitude that I want to achieve at this club. Not like a Conte, which was like, probably would have taken other offers if they were available, where Tottenham was like my second choice type thing. Whereas this is like, Postecoglou might not be Tottenham's first choice, but I think he'll do everything to make it this work for himself, because he wants to succeed. from what I've seen from him. So I'm excited to see what he does, what he does with the team, what he does with players leaving, players coming in. If he sells Kane for 150 million, thinking I can rebuild, you know, that might be the way. He might come in and say to Levy, just get the money and let's go again. That'd be interesting. It'd be crazy, but it'd be interesting.
I'd love to hear the conversation between Ange and Daniel Levy. That's Listen, Stephen Kelly, thank you very much for taking the call. Very informative. As always, we're going to continue our soccer chat tomorrow with Mark Langdon and wrap up all of the European leagues and talk more about the latest transfer rumours. But in a few moments' time, we're going to chat Gaelic football. So stick with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Gaelic football.
Now, you're very welcome back to the final part of Game On. Before we check Gaelic football, just round up the League of Ireland ongoing matches and results. In the Premier Division, Dundalk are leading UCD 4-1. That is past the 90 in that one. Cork City are leading Bohemians 1-0 with around 3 minutes of normal time to go. Sligo Rovers, Shamrock Rovers approaching half-time. No goals to report there, but Alan Colley was saying the visitors are in the ascendancy. In that one, in the First Division, Cove are leading Longford with a couple of minutes left to play. 1-0. Galway are leading Finharps 6-0. And 6-0 was the score that Waterford defeated to Kerry a little bit earlier on. Austin O'Malley is still with us. Austin, loads to get through, so let's just dive straight in the All-Ireland series. So what we do know is now there's only one team officially knocked out, and that is Clare. Everyone else technically can still or will still be playing football, certainly for the final game in the group stages and perhaps later into the summer as well. So starting with Group 1, over the weekend saw Kerry defeat Cork on Saturday and then Mayo defeat Loud by a single point on Sunday. Let's start with Mayo, I suppose. And I watched it. Now, listen, they had a 5-point lead going in right to the end after Fionn McDonagh fisted the point, and then there was a goal and a late point for Loud as well. What did you make of Mayo's performance, I suppose?
Yeah, I suppose it was patchy. And look, they had built a little bit of a lead, but I think they were untidy in a lot of their stuff, you know, and were probably expecting a better performance coming from what we'd seen against Kerry and Killarney. So they definitely left the door open there at the end. And Loud, in all fairness, and listening to maybe one or two of them afterwards in the interview, you know, that they had a bit of a strategy that they were going to push up hard in that last quarter and go after Mayo. And they'd done that, and they managed to get the goal, obviously, that brought them back into it through Conal McEver, you know. So Mayo would be disappointed, you know, in the manner that they didn't close the game out, having that cushion and so on. So with a bit of work, I suppose, they took a bit of a stumble and a stagger. They've got across the line, but again, they're sitting top of the group with maximum points, so they will be happy enough. But there's a lot to work on there. And I suppose one thing looking in, you'd have kind of thought that you know, given on the back of last or the performance against Kerry, that, you know, where they created a number of goal chances, we didn't raise a green flag yesterday.
Yeah, that seems to be a general consensus across all, nearly all counties, except for maybe Derry, I suppose.
Yeah, but, well, it seems numerous chances there.
Absolutely. Peter Canavan is also on the line. And Peter, we're just sticking with Group 1 for the moment, and we will work our way through, I suppose, after Mayo's victory. What did you make of Kerry's performance to date as well? Like, where are Kerry and how frustrated will they be perhaps within the group?
Yeah, they'll be a bit frustrated, Shane. It's a bit like Mayo. They were underwhelming. And you know that there's far more in them. But I wouldn't take away from Cork's performance. I thought at various stages in that game, previous Cork teams may have thrown in the towel. I thought they fought very hard with a man down. It looked as if the game's well and truly over. And they came back. They got themselves back into the game. And looked towards the end, they were still going at Kerry. So first of all, I think you need to acknowledge that Cork do appear to be a different animal. Kerry appear to be saving themselves for bigger opposition. That's the only thing I can say in terms of motivation. We've seen this before and with my own county. On the back of winning on All-Ireland, they were very slow to get going. In fact, they never got going after they won it. But I think with Kerry, come the bigger teams, come the knockout stages, you would expect to see a much improved Kerry outfit.
If they didn't finish top, Austin, say for Kerry now, you've got 3 matches consecutive, back to back. I know players want to be playing matches as well, but it's a lot to ask, is it?
It is, but again, I think these guys in the level that they're at in terms of conditioning and that it wouldn't faze them. And in some ways, I suppose you could be accentuating the positive that, you know, I think the one thing that Kerry are maybe lacking at the moment a little bit is a little bit of rhythm and fluency. So a number of games, even going back to back, you know, could help them establish that. They've obviously tidied things up a little bit defensively from when Mayo played them, and that was evident the weekend. But they're just lacking that little bit of rhythm and fluency up front and around the pitch. So I think Jack O'Connor even referenced that in terms of that. That's a big work on for them in him. So an extra couple of games could in actual fact, give them that.
Mm. Peter, what did you make of the Kerry penalty, I suppose? I've heard a lot of discussion over this. What's your take on it all?
Yeah, I thought it was a harsh enough call, to be honest, on Cork. Look, it's a close call in terms of a referee. You don't have the benefit of going over and watching a replay of it and checking how far away the Cork defenders were. From Paul Geaney's point of view, as an inside forward, he did everything right. He knew that Powder was coming in. He knew that Powder was under pressure and knew that there was going to be contact made and bought the penalty, possibly. In my opinion, for a referee to give a penalty and a black card, my interpretation of it, I know it doesn't say it has to be a clear goal-scoring opportunity, but I think if you chat to most referees, that's the way that they would look at it. They would have to say it's a clear opportunity. So he was coming in from an angle. The chances may well have been that he was going to fist it over the bar. And there was two Cork players coming very close behind Powder. And as I said earlier, I referred back to Conor Gormley's block in the 2003 All-Ireland Final. You can remember Armagh player through. Gormley came from behind, you know, 2 or 3 yards behind to get a diving block. And so I don't think it was clear enough for me to give a penalty. And I think possibly Jack O'Connor may agree with that, because if you followed his comments after it, when he was asked about it, he thought, it was the right decision, but he wasn't too annoyed if he had to give, you know, a 13-metre free. So that in itself tells you that maybe he knew that they were getting one.
Mm. Austin, perhaps it's the lack of consistency that a different referee might have made a different decision. That's the frustration.
Yeah,
part.
I suppose it goes back to that consistency piece again. And look, it is it was a very, very tough call, but I'd have to agree with Peter. I think it hinged on just like the clarity of it. Was it a clear chance? And just with the way defenders were converging on him and that. And but look, Paul Geaney being highly experienced and an excellent poacher, you know, he'd done everything right as you would expect from an inside forward to do. And then you got to hand it over to the referee. But I think it was harsh. Yeah, I think it was harsh. And I think probably John Cleary afterwards would have been disappointed maybe with the decision, the Cork manager, because it did alter the complexion of the game.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Mayo need a draw or win against Cork to take top spot. Kerry can only finish top if Cork beat Mayo, with score difference set to be the determining factor as well. Cork can finish top with a win if Kerry failed to beat Loud, and a Loud victory of any sort would secure their advancement, with Kerry most likely to be eliminated. In Group 2, Peter, Tyrone 13 points, Armagh 11 points. What did you make of Tyrone's victory?
Very similar to Monaghan. At times they were very good. They looked very composed. The first half in particular, again, they really dominated the game. Armagh gave Tyrone the kickouts and tried to force Tyrone down the wings, and they were setting up their traps for turnovers. Tyrone didn't buy it. They changed direction and looked very comfortable on the ball. And in fact, off their own kickouts, Tyrone scored 9 points against Armagh. Off obviously had a major bearing on the game. One of Armagh's leaders, who of course they would have needed in the second half, wasn't there on the pitch. But from a Tyrone point of view, Shane, they should have been kicking on. They shouldn't have been hanging on at the end the way they were, and that was disappointing. If a better side would have been making use of their possession, would have been hurting Armagh, and you know, they should have been 5-6 points up going into the closing stages. So from that point of view, it was disappointing. But look, anytime Tyrone beat Armagh, it's not a bad day, and we still have to win the last game. A bit similar to Louth, there's so many of these groups that everybody has a chance of progressing and going on. Westmeath's performances in the last two games, Tyrone wouldn't need to take them for granted.
No, absolutely. Westmeath was certainly were in it against Galway, I suppose, but until the red card for Conlon. But just why didn't Tyrone push on, Peter? I mean, they have the talent, they have the ability.
Yeah, look, it was the exact same against Monaghan, when they attacked Monaghan in the first half with pace and purpose, they were getting scores. I felt it was the same, moving the ball quicker in the first half against Armagh. We looked as if we could hurt them inside. But again, this term game management is used a lot at the minute, and whether you feel as if you take the safe options when in possession and going back and forward around the fringes without really asking too many questions. And I don't care who you are, you still need to, you know, have a bit of pace and a bit of creativity to break down defences. And, you know, I compared throwing to Derry yesterday. You know, when Derry, despite the fact they were leading, you know, and leading well, whenever they had the chance to attack and to take somebody on, they did it, and they were still racking up a big score. So look, it's something that's concerning from a Tyrone point of view, and something that they need to work on moving forward.
Yeah, Austin, Peter mentioned Derry there, so let's just skip ahead to Group 4. Conor Glass said Derry good but not great against Donegal. Would you agree with that synopsis?
Yeah, look, I thought they were very impressive, you know, in terms of, like, even looking in at the amount of goal chances that they created, and it's visible that they're really going after goal chances. Now, they didn't take them all. I think they created around 7, but I mean, I think they've added a little bit to their game plan this year again, and it just looks like the way their ability to transition ball, and in particular their half back line of McInnes and Donaghy and McGrugan there, like, they were literally like three steam engines all day, and I think they literally all had fingerprints on in terms of the creation of those goals. So there was a lot in that Derry performance, you know, to rack up 314. Donegal, I thought, put up a fairly stiff challenge to them, and I know Conor Glass probably came out afterwards and said they were disappointed and they have things to work on, but overall I thought it was pretty smart, and I thought they just put a flare up that their energy looked good and that they're putting their hand up to be contenders, I think.
Yeah, Peter, would you agree? Genuine All-Ireland contenders?
Absolutely, and yeah, I think that was a fair enough assessment by Conor Glass. They were, and it shows you how far they've come. Where they go to Donegal, they beat them with something to spare, and his assessment is they were good, not great. So, you know, what would the scoreline have been if they had played really well? So, absolutely. I think they have key players in key positions, and you'd be foolish to write them off.
Yeah, I was watching the match, and, you know, I suppose, agree, Ozzy, that a case of the squad goal chances, yet they scored 3 goals in a championship that we're lacking on goals. Peter, Monaghan then in Group 4, 3 points from their 2 games. Where are they, I suppose? Jack McCarron coming back 9 points, 8 from play. How big a boost is that?
Yeah, massive. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen the points last night, that the quality of them were something else. Most of those scores weren't straightforward, but he made them look very easy. So, look, and Conor McManus, I think, was used sparingly once again. So to have those two men on your side, they, you know, it's a serious bonus when it comes to taking points. Now, the two boys didn't start against Derry, which gives you an idea, simply because they would have spent most of the game chasing Derry players, and such is the way that Derry play. So it was a very open game yesterday, first of all, Shane, and both sides really went at it, very entertaining to watch. But, you know, Clare have been struggling in that Group 4, and Derry's going to play them now, and it's a big game in terms of, you know, score difference and where it actually leaves Monaghan. Monaghan have to beat Donegal, and that's by no means an easy challenge, especially after the way that, you know, Donegal are improving as well. So, you know, Benny Corey will be happy that they're sitting on 3 points, but if they don't perform against Donegal now, they will finish third in their group, and with the prospect of playing a Kerry or playing a Roscommon in the preliminary round. So this will be a massive game for them now. I think that every chance is going to be in Healy Park, possibly in Oma. So Monaghan and Donegal will be one of the ties of the last round.
Absolutely. I was going to quiz you both on where the neutral venues might be for round 3, but unfortunately that is all we have time for. We're already running late, so I do apologise to the brilliant Betta de Silva is up next.